Call House Education to order. It's 2 minutes after 8, Monday morning, March 21st. Would you call the roll, please?
Here.
Excused.
Here.
Here.
Chair Keller.
Here.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, we have before us SB 89, second hearing on it. There's some questions that came up, and the sponsor will, I've asked the sponsor to come up and answer those. And if you would, Senator, give us an overview of the bill, and we'll just start right in. We'll take public testimony with that. So come on up. And for the record, Representative Vasquez, Vice Chair, has joined us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, for this opportunity. Apologize for not being here last week. We had some finance issues we were dealing with in Senate Finance. So, through the chair, last meeting, my assistant, Krista McDonald, introduced the bill on my behalf. SB 89 has three main sections to it. One is a parental rights component. One is a banning abortion providers from the schools. And another is a physical examination for teachers. And just to explain the last one, the physical examinations for teachers, that was a leftover from when we did 89 last spring in the Senate. We were also looking at ways to reduce certain mandates from the school districts, and we asked the school districts if they could provide us with items that they would like to see done away with so that they could build capacity or save them some resources. That particular item was one of the items left in the bill that was not part of the CS of HB 44 that we did last spring. In HB 44, there were other mandates that were taken off the backs of school districts, and for reasons we're not 100% sure, this particular mandate was not in HB 44, and as a result, it was left in 89. So that's why it looks like it's the odd man out for this particular bill. So just very briefly, so why run SB 89? As an educator for almost 30 years, as a teacher, principal, superintendent, school board president, I have met many, many parents, many students, and many educators. It's become a growing concern that parental rights are being infringed upon by both the federal government and the state government, and that there are things occurring in the schools that a number of folks are agreeing less and less with. Evidence of this, we just need to point to the fact that we have literally thousands and thousands of students that do not want to attend our neighborhood schools. It's one of the fastest growing methods of schooling kids in the state of Alaska and actually across the country is homeschooling. As you know, in Alaska we have two types of homeschooling. One is divorced of a public program, which is growing, and one is part of a public program, which is really growing. So many parents still want to be part of the public education system, but they're having issues with some of the things that are occurring in our neighborhood schools. And oftentimes this revolves around values of a family that they feel are being questioned at our neighborhood schools. Just a little background, my entire career has been public education, just for the record. Never attended a private school. My kids don't attend private schools. Kids still, children still go to public schools. Because like many of you, I think public schools offer some incredible opportunities. But again, part of SB 89 is some of the issues that are becoming more prevalent with the passage of NCLB and its newest version, ESSA. There are concerns, again, that parents' rights, the rights of a parent to direct the education and upbringing of their children, is being questioned, and also the concept of having abortion providers in the schools teaching children about sexuality. So that's the basis for running the bills. Again, there were three sections of the bills, the parental rights component, the abortion provider component, and the part on the physical examinations. There's a number of questions that have come up, and so I would like to take a minute through the chair to clarify some of these issues.
Please, thank you.
Even today, there was an editorial, I believe, in the Daily News that talks about the need for sex education. This bill does not prevent sex education. does not do that. And I have to say that over and over again because sometimes folks hear what they want to hear and read what they want to read. This bill does not prevent sex education. I don't know about you, but when I was in middle school and high school, and that was a long time ago, we did have sex education. It was taught in a health class. It apparently worked. I've got three children. Been married for 28 years. And so the point I'm trying to make is it does not infringe or does not prevent schools from teaching about sex education. It merely prevents abortion providers from contracting with schools to do so. A couple questions that also came up in arguments made, you know, against SB 89 would be that this infringes upon HB 44, which was passed last year, Arendt and Breeze Law. It does not. Explicitly in 89, it talks about that. You would have to opt out of Arendt and Breeze Law. So, again, it doesn't impact that particular law. We made sure that it did not, that it was not going to be an opt-in. A couple other issues. This is an attack on local control. We have over 227 pages of school law in the state of Alaska in which we determine the parameters of what can be taught and how it can be taught in schools. We have a constitution that compels us to establish and maintain a system of public school by general law. In other words, it's our job to make general law to help guide the schools. An example of local control, being infringed upon would have been, another example, is last year, HB 44. Many of us in this room supported HB 44. There are some in this room that were sponsors on HB 44. HB 44 was compelling law to compel school districts to implement training in dating violence and sexual awareness for children. That was compelling law that covers all districts. Another example of a compelling law was a year or two before in HB 274, I believe it was our education law, was the ability to opt out of a class through a test. Many of us supported that as well, but that too was compelling law that all districts have to comply with. So the idea that this is an attack on local control, the idea is it's not an attack. It's part of our job just to periodically look at issues that come up from parents, students, educators, as to what we need to take a look at as legislators and possibly legislate for our school districts. Again, arguments being made that without abortion providers, we wouldn't have the ability to teach sex education in schools. Again, this doesn't make a lot of sense because you have teachers, and I hope you have teachers in the classroom when these folks are in there teaching our kids, because if they're not in the classroom, that raises a whole other issue. But the arguments are made that this is going to cost us more money because for some reason that we have yet to figure out, because we're trying to get information from at least one of the abortion providers in the state of Alaska on their curriculum and costs, which we haven't been able to get yet, that this somehow saves money. We don't know what it costs. We don't know what's being taught. We don't know if the teacher's in the room when it's being taught. Again, it raises other questions if the teacher's not in the room, but the point we're trying to make is that there's already cost accounted for. If you have hired a teacher and they are in the room when an abortion provider is teaching the sex education, the teacher themselves could teach that sex education and be trained in it. So, the idea that it's going to cost more money, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And, again, I have some experience in this area being a teacher and an administrator. SB 89 is unconstitutional. Only a court can determine constitutionality. We have numerous memos that folks will cite from our alleged legal. I have the same memos, and I'll be able to cite different aspects of different parts of that memo that we'll talk about. It may be unconstitutional. It could be. The courts have not determined. The courts could determine. There are two states currently that have similar laws, Louisiana and Missouri. So far, they have not been held to be unconstitutional. There is an issue with along the unconstitutionality aspect, there's an issue of with a term called a bill of attainder. This, too, can only be determined if this is unconstitutional through a court. And again, similar laws in other states have yet to be overturned by courts. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. We've got a lot of information here that I think will support the bill. I understand that there are folks that want to support having abortion providers in the school. There's obviously a number of folks that do not, and I look forward to answering any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Senator. before I go to committee questions, on the question of the constitutional issues, we have Alyssa Graves online, Alliance Defending Freedom, and I would like her to testify first, and then we'll go to questions for the sponsor. And the reason I'm doing it that order is because of the constitutional questions that came up in the last meeting. So, Alyssa, are you online? Alyssa?
Hi, yes, I am here. My name is Alyssa Graves. I'm an attorney for Alliance Defending Freedom. We're a nonprofit legal organization. My first point here is SB 89 does not infringe on First Amendment rights. It does not restrict the ability of teachers or other school personnel to speak outside of their employment. It doesn't forbid teachers from volunteering or working with abortion services providers in their private capacity as citizens, as opponents of this bill have alleged. Instead, what SB 89 does is prohibit any person who is employed or volunteers with an abortion provider from delivering sex education instruction in their capacity as a representative of an abortion provider. So what's key here is this representative capacity. What this means is that teachers and other school personnel can be permitted to volunteer with an abortion provider. They can stuff envelopes, they can participate in rallies, they can answer phone calls, and they're still also permitted as teachers to deliver instruction.
It sounds like a technical interruption. So what we'll do, I want to recognize first that Representative Sponholz joined us at 8:13. So what we'll do is there any questions then for the committee for the sponsor? To Representative Drummond and then Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Thank you, Senator. I'm just curious, have you ever in your career had to opt one of your children out of a class, and if so, have you had any trouble doing that?
I opted one of my the youngest child out of testing, and I wouldn't say I had trouble, but the issues surrounding that particular opt out, there were questions as to whether you could do that as a parent. Could you do that? Was there any enabling language anywhere to allow you to do that? And I think that's a question that still persists, especially around the federally mandated mm-hmm. assessment. But as a parent and somebody that understands school law and a bit of the Constitution, I'm a predetermined individual, and if I feel that something is not appropriate for my child, I will make sure that they're not part of it. There are a lot of other parents that have called me, and that's specifically why that first part of the bill is actually put together. There's a lot of parents that have called that don't understand what their rights are, that believe that they can't do certain things when it comes to the schools in terms of having their children opt out of certain programs, courses, classes. And although those rights are inherent, the point in doing this in SB 89 is just to make it explicit in law.
If I could
follow up.
But have you ever had to opt a child out of lessons or classes rather than a test? I think the test is another bill that I'm aware is moving.
I have not opted any of my children out of classes.
Okay, and if I might. And as an administrator, what has been your observation of the difference and of the work created by opting in versus opting out?
The opting in concept is fairly new, and I have not been an administrator since that has occurred. We've had law on the books, for example, since the 90s on certain surveys that you opt in on, especially if it deals with matters of a personal nature and family mm-hmm. nature. But again, I haven't been in the schools as an administrator probably since 2006.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did you have a question, Representative Seaton? I thought I saw your
hand. Yes, I did. A separate question. to come to that. You first started talking about Section 4 of the bill. And that says that a school district, on line 15, page 3, a school district may require physical examinations. But then it goes on to say this section, a school district may not pay the cost of the physical examination. So it seems a little disparate to what you were talking about, because here it's saying that they may require that, and but they may not. And if the school district's health insurance provides the annual physical exams, yet here we're saying in statute that the district may not provide that. How does that coalesce, or how do those work together?
That's a good question, Representative. Again, this was a this last section was a section that was left over from some amendments that were done last year involving 89, but also HB 44. This came from educators through the Superintendents Association, or excuse me, the School Administrators Association, that it was felt that this was an area that if it was removed, then there would not be a financial burden, per se, put on the backs of the school districts. I understand what you're saying. It says that they may require it. It doesn't say they shall. But it does say that they would not pay for it. So, I mean, that is a good question. It's a good question.
Thank you. Representative Seaton, a follow-up.
And the physical examinations, would that include fingerprints and background checks as well?
I don't believe so. That was not, I don't know the answer to that. I don't believe so. That the fingerprints and background work is for certification.
Follow-up, Representative Seaton?
Follow-up, yeah. I don't think there's any restriction on district that it can't be part of the physical examination required.
You're talking about fingerprints?
Yeah.
And I'm just saying my experience has been that's generally you deal with that particular item when you're renewing your certificate or getting a new certificate. And you do that through the public safety.
Follow-up, Representative Seaton?
I have further questions on whether we should be saying that a school district can require as a condition of employment something that from the bush you may not be able to get, and then you may be telling teachers they have to fly into Anchorage, and since it says that the school district may not pay for it, or probably any travel or anything else associated with that, it seems like we are putting a huge burden on trying to retain teachers in Bush, Alaska, because if this is a requirement and the district can't even compensate people for the costs of what they're requiring, I think that we're talking about losing teachers from the Bush just partially because of the additional requirements and costs we would be imposing upon those teachers. So, Mr. Chairman, at this point,
did you want to respond with Senator Dunleavy?
No, I mean, again, from my perspective, when a bill is run, all aspects of a bill should be discussed, and there are some, I think it makes a lot of sense, and it helps a bill when there's some good questions regarding sections of the bill. The only thing I would say is that our issues in Alaska, especially rural Alaska, are much greater in terms of retention, recruitment and retention, than physicals.
Thank you. Follow-up? Or another question?
No,
go through the questions that, if you would, Representative Seaton and all in the committee. If you brought up a question and you feel like it has not been answered in the entry, bring it up again. And did you have another question? Go ahead. Go through your list.
I don't have the list. I'm just going through the bill and the testimony. But on Section 5, there was just testimony that a volunteer or an employee with a group that's an abortion provider can provide instruction in the schools as long as they're not acting specifically as an employee at the time of providing. Is that your reading of Section 5?
So Section 5C Through the chair?
Yes.
A school district may not permit an abortion service provider or an employee or volunteer of an abortion service provider to offer, sponsor, or furnish course materials or provide instruction relating to human sexuality or sexually transmitted diseases. That is the language, and it's unfortunate that the individual on the phone is no longer there, but the idea here is that, again, abortion provider coming in under the guise of an abortion provider is not would be barred from teaching sex education in schools.
So follow up.
So a volunteer with an abortion service provider, under your reading of your bill, can provide instruction in the classroom and provide materials as long as they are not basically employed to give that service by an organization?
It's my interpretation of the language that we put in here that a school district, again, would not permit an abortion service provider, and anyone that is employed by that organization or is an integral part of that organization would not be able to deliver sex education in schools.
Follow up, Reverend.
I'm trying to get clarity. So the volunteer or the employee is, if as they are presenting that material, are acting as a employee for that organization, the materials for that organization, but they could go ahead and participate and provide those services as long as they say they're doing it on their own.
Senator Dunleavy?
Yes, I'm trying to understand the question. Could you reframe it, please?
Well, maybe I'll explain it this way. We have a lot of people that volunteer or
yes.
may be employees of a organization you do not approve of.
Yes.
And they want to come into the school and provide materials, and the school district is having them do that. And as long as they don't officially say that they are there as a representative of, let's say, Planned Parenthood, then they could go ahead and do that. They could come in and they could provide instruction, provide materials, as long as at the time they're doing that, they don't say, I'm doing this for Planned Parenthood.
If they're associated with an abortion provider, then they would not be able to teach sex education in schools.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
A follow-up on that, just to make sure this clarification maybe saves some work down the road. The course materials, it also extends to that and instruction. So is it reasonable to assume that we're talking course materials that would be, the source would be the abortion service provider?
Correct. If you have a sex education course that's being taught by a teacher, certified teacher in a school, and that curriculum has been approved by the district, that would be the curriculum that would be taught. If an individual is volunteering, or if an abortion provider service provider is wanting to contract with the school or come in and provide materials and in instruction, they would be banned from doing that as an abortion provider.
Okay. The technical problem is gone, and I know that Alyssa Graves might be able to add something here, so I'm going to ask Alyssa to come back on the line. We'd ask for your testimony. Something happened. Maybe you dropped your phone. I don't know. But anyway, you there?
Yes, I'm sorry. It was something with the conference line. It muted me, but let me back in.
Okay. Have you been following this recent line of questioning in the last few minutes?
I missed about the last 5 minutes. I had to hang up and call back for it to let me back in.
Okay, I will let the maker of the question ask it again. And,
absolutely.
Is that Representative Seaton? Did you want to ask your question again so that Alyssa can
answer? I got my answer from the sponsor.
You're satisfied?
Yeah.
The question was, in Section 5 of the bill, whether or not the volunteer was broad enough so that it or narrow enough so that it was just talking about volunteers. I don't mean to be putting words in anybody's mouth here, and I'll give opportunity to correct, but as long as they, the question is the volunteer that is representing the abortion service provider.
Correct. It does not cover activities outside of public employment. It cannot restrict this constitutionally. So the way that Section 5 is worded seems to apply only where they are acting as a representative as an abortion provider, and the state can reasonably limit that. What they can't limit is their ability to volunteer outside of employment. But a teacher can't come in acting as a representative of Planned Parenthood or any other abortion provider and deliver sex education.
Thank you, Alyssa.
Yes.
Okay, so did you have a question, Representative Drummond? I thought I saw your hand. Oh, well, first, Representative Seaton, I'm sorry, we've got through Section 5. Is there more you had there?
Yes, I had asked the question before on page 2 of the bill. We have line 24, which says that there must require written permission from the child's parent before each separate activity, class, or program is provided to a child. That includes content involving human reproduction or sexual matters. And then at the top of the, it's more broad. And so I'm trying to figure out which you were talking about and which the bill intends, whether it's intending that it's each separate activity or the activity is going to be covered by a class. Maybe it's several different activities over time, because it seems to be line 6 and 7 is a different reading than the specifics on line 24 says each separate activity, class, or program.
Senator Dunleavy.
So page, just to make sure, through the chair, page 2, line 6, 7, and then line
24.
Yes, line 24.
And the question you're asking is, how are they different, or do they?
Well, yeah, on line 7 it says, you know, 6 and 7, written permission from the child's parent before the child may participate in the activity, the class, or the program. And then down on line 24, it's you must have that written permission before each separate activity or class. And it was talked about there may be a quarter in which there's going to be four or five activities, over 2 months period. And it seems that line 24 says that before each activity, there must be a written permission. And is that the intention of the bill, and is that the way the bill is written?
Through the chair, so the idea is that parents know well in advance what the schools are going to teach. And again, as an educator, the idea would be that you have your plan laid out. You know where you want to go. You know what your end goal is, so you back plan with what your lessons and activities are. You know what your lessons and activities are. You would post them. You would let parents know what those activities are well in advance. That way, a parent could take a look at the activity, look at the curriculum, look at the presentation, and say whether it's appropriate for the child or not, for a whole host of reasons. Often what happens is, and I'm going to say that again, future, often, not always what happens, but often, is that as the plan is put together, there's, quote, a great idea or a great presentation that somebody finds, or a friend that knows that's just has come in for a visit, and they are part of they're part of some group, or they're part of some experience, and the classroom teacher wants the students to hear that person speak. Parents have a right to know well in advance what's going to happen there, so they can make a decision if they want their child to be part of that. So again, the idea would be to plan out, know exactly what you're going to do, so you can hit your goal and your target, especially if hopefully it has to do with student performance, and whatever the activity is going to be, well in advance that parents are notified.
Follow-up? Representative Seaton.
Yeah, so Mr. Chairman, this is, sounds like we're talking about at the beginning of the year, you could say we're going to cover these subjects in this classroom, and it's going to be through these sets of days, and a parent could sign the form and opt in to all of those, but that doesn't seem to be the 2 weeks, or will that count as not less than 2 weeks before the activity class or program. So this, you know.
Through the chair, Senator, Representative Seat. Again, the activity would be, if you could plan it all out, that would be great. But we know that things change. But when things change, give parents at least 2 weeks in advance to know what's going on so they can make a decision if they want the child to be part of that activity. That's what this is really saying. No surprises. No child coming home saying, today I learned about this or that. That surprises the parent, in which the parent then has to sit down with the child and understand what happened. And no surprises, so that the parent doesn't have to go to the school and say, why didn't we know what was going on? So that is, it's laid out well in advance. Again, the two-week notice, if this will put restrictions on schools, but I think it's a break or check that's necessary. If you have somebody that's coming in the night before a class and you want them to be part of that class, I think there is a burden on the behalf of the school and the teacher to let parents know exactly what's going on. So they have an opportunity to say yes or no to whether they want their child in that class. For example, this is just making this up through the chair. Let's say you have laid out in biology your lessons and your curriculum. Curriculum has been approved by the school board. It's been vetted publicly. Everyone knows what's going on. But 2 days before a particular lesson, an individual that may be part of, I'll probably get phone calls on this, PETA, for example, they're going to come into a biology class and teach 2 days before. Parents have not been notified, but individual comes in and they teach their view of how animals should be viewed by society and what the role of an animal is in society. Well, that parent may find that lesson objectionable, but never had an opportunity to say, I don't want my child to be part of that. So I certainly don't think it's wrong, and I don't think it's, I think it's a necessary burden to be able to vet. For example, right now, most school districts must vet their curriculum in a public meeting. But a lot of these mini lessons that we're talking about, they don't get vetted in a public meeting. Oftentimes it occurs in the manner I just described. There's a great idea, or there's a friend or an individual or a group. They want access to kids. They want to be able to demonstrate or talk about what they're all about. Parents don't know what's going on. And through the chair, just to add to that, that was probably one of the single biggest reasons when I was the administrator of the Matsu homeschool correspondence program, which is fastest growing school in the state, literally. Why they were withdrawing their kids from neighborhood schools. They wanted to have control over the education of their kids. They wanted to have control over where there would be no surprises in what was being delivered. And again, that's one of the reasons why kids are migrating out of the neighborhood schools. And so I think, through the chair, my goal is, again, to expand the umbrella of public education, to include as many people in public education. My background, again, is nothing but public education. I believe this bill, if you allow parents to know well in advance what's going on, you'll engage them more and they'll support the schools more. If it's a surprise or they're caught off guard or they're always trying to guess what's going on, at some point they say, as people have said to me, it's not worth sending our child to that school.
Mr. Follow-up, just to make sure I understand. So each activity, you are meaning that 2 weeks before each activity,
yes,
there needs to be written permission from the parents.
Yes, parents need to know what's going on.
So it's not once at the beginning of the school year done. It's each activity at least 2 weeks.
Through the chair, if they knew exactly what was going to be taught every day, what activity there was going to be every day at the beginning of the school year, that's all you would need. But if that changed.
Okay. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, Representative Vasquez?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dunleavy, I'm very curious, page 3, lines 5 through 19, physical examinations for teachers. I'm rather surprised this provision is here. I would have assumed that this was happening. Is it not happening? Is this why we have to have this provision? Physical examination of teachers before appointment?
Through the chair, are you referring to lines 15?
Yeah.
Okay, 15. Again, that was earlier we explained that this particular section is the odd man out, meaning last spring when we were going through different variations of SB 89 and HB 44, Bree and Aaron's law, we were trying to figure out a way to help school districts build capacity in a environment of limited resources. So Senator Gardner and myself and others solicited from school districts what would be some things that they would like to see taken off the books that could free up some money or free up some resources. This was one of just several items that were given to us, but this was one item that, for whatever reasons we can't explain, did not make it into the committee substitute for Aaron and Bree's Law, HB 44, that was left out. So we just retained it in here to follow up and complete that process of helping school districts with some of the mandates that they felt they would like to see done away with.
Follow up, Representative.
Okay. Still, I'm sorry, Senator Dunleavy. I still doesn't answer the question I'm looking for. Maybe I am not asking it appropriately. Is it right now, what is happening right now? Are school districts actually required to require physical examination of teachers? That's why you may have the language may. I still don't know why this is being inserted.
Through the chair, Representative Vasquez, it is my understanding, and again, I've been out of the system since 2006, but it is my understanding that physical exams are still required of especially folks coming into the profession, a new coming into the profession, and periodically throughout the years, those physical examinations could consist of a basic physical exam, including a checking for a TB test, for example, and that the law, as it was stated, had school districts in many cases paying for this.
Follow up, Representative Vasquez.
So if this provision passes, that would mean that the TB or the tuberculosis test would not be required?
Excuse me, through the chair, it just means the school districts would not be required to pay for it.
Okay. But the language here states, and I'm going to quote from lines 15 and 16, a school district may require physical examinations of teachers as a condition of employment. I do not read that as a requirement.
In some cases, for example, and I'm just guessing, and we'll get follow-up, we'll get more detailed answers to the question, but you may have a situation where a teacher's been in the state, they've had a physical examination in one district, they're going into another district, that physical exam may be up to date, and there may not be a need to have that physical exam done again in the district they moved to the following year. But again, through the chair, I will get detailed information, details for this for your question.
Okay. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question on that same section. The your sectional analysis says that on section 4, it prohibits school districts from paying the costs of physical examinations for teachers. Yet the words are may. A school district may require, a school district may not pay the cost.
Yeah.
That seems permissive to me.
No, through the chair, it's a very good question. What I'll do is, if through the chair, is provide more details on this. It's a good question, Representative Drummond and Vasquez.
On that topic, just so you know the intent of the chair on this is I'm trying to give every opportunity for questions now. There will be an opportunity to provide amendments no later than noon tomorrow, Tuesday, and that will give us time to interact with the sponsor and to make sure that we understand what the amendments are, and then we'll take this up again on Wednesday. But that's the general. Representative Vasquez, did you have something?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I personally find troubling, I'm going back to this physical examination for teachers, I find it personally troubling that it would not be required, and I realize that it is difficult to recruit teachers for the bush, but on the other hand, you don't want someone dealing with children that have some contagious disease, and you know, a lot of the diseases we thought we dealt with in the past several decades are reoccurring. I mean, things like tuberculosis and the strains are getting really, really more virulent and resistant.
and also hepatitis C. I mean, there's conditions that would place students in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. If I could interject, if you would, they will provide more information. And if you bring a amendment, you know, after interacting with them and seeing where we're at on that, we'll take that up, and then you can put that on the record when we make our change on the amendment. So,
okay.
Thanks. It was a good point.
Through the chair, we'll provide detailed information on this. So,
okay.
Representative Seaton again.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On section 2, page 3, it says on subsection 5 there that human reproduction or sexual matters does not include criteria, and then on section 7 it's sexual abuse. How do you distinguish between sexual abuse and sexual matters in the presentation of materials?
Well, through the chair, it's defined under 1430.355. It's specific to the Aaron's Law curriculum that my understanding is being identified or developed through the work that's being done through the task force and through the department. So what's identified under 14.30.355 and a similar law 14.30.356, that would be excluded from the section 5. And so it would not include that curricula for those specific to satisfy that specific law.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to figure out if we are having specific educational on sexual abuse,
mm-hmm.
how is that not going to cover the subject of sexual matters, as you've got in there, human reproduction or sexual matters?
So when I'm reading 5, human reproduction and sexual matters, that definition does not include curricula for the section AB below, for the law below, that's required through HB 44 that was passed last year.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm trying to figure out if we're talking about sexual abuse and we're talking about all the different forms of sexual abuse and all those things, those are not going to be considered sexual matters for discussion in classrooms, is my I read the words.
Right.
But I just don't understand the practicality of how you can be talking about, and I don't mean you, the bill, how the bill can be talking about, well, you can teach all kinds of issues relating around sexual abuse, but you can't talk anything about sexual matters unless these kids have opted in to the specific activities of the courses. And so it seems like there's going to be conflict because the definition of what parents are going to think are sexual matters are probably going to be well up on the scale when we're talking about sexual abuse and all the different forms of sexual abuse that you could have. And I don't understand quite how this discrimination between these two terms is going to play out for parents.
Through the chair, so I'm doing my best to try and understand, Representative Seaton, the question. You have Aaron's Law that was passed last year that deals with dating violence and sexual abuse awareness. Then you have sex education and reproduction. For what we refer to as Aaron Bree's Law, it's not an opt-in situation. It's different. In other words, all students are in it unless their parents opt them out. That's number one. Number two, the materials, again, human reproduction and sexual matters does not include curricula for, the exclusion that we're talking about above does not apply to the Aaron's Law, the Bree's Law. I'm trying to make sense here.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just don't understand how conflict for parents is not going to be seen as it's probably much more problematic for parents on the teaching of sexual abuse and that than there is on how human reproduction takes place. So I guess I'm just having this conflict of trying to figure out how you would have enabling parents to say, I don't want those topics taught to my kids, and yet probably the component that would most affect, they would be most unhappy about, would be the part that they don't have to opt into, they just opt out from. So I guess that's my dilemma. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Representative, thank you for putting the question on the record, and I would ask that if you anticipate an amendment on this to work with the sponsor and the drafter and legal to make sure that it's clear, so the committee knows what we're doing. So thank you for putting it on the record.
Thank you. One more, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seaton.
And we had testimony when we did have public testimony that basically 80% of parents, it was somewhere right around 80% of parents, don't have sexual talks with their kids. We've been talking about homeschooling, and I'm all in favor of homeschooling. I mean, that is the ultimate parent involvement in their kids' lives. And those are the really involved parents. But if we have 80% of those in public schools anyway, where the survey results were, not having that talk with their children. And I guess I'm trying to figure out how, if the schools have come to rely on organizations to give them materials because they haven't felt comfortable with the education required of teachers to present other materials or develop other materials, how are we going back to saying, okay, none of those materials that you currently use in your curriculum can be used anymore, and you have to develop previous materials, which most teachers aren't comfortable talking to their students about either. How do we get there?
Again, through the chair, Representative Seaton, if I understand the question, then we may have larger problems than we think if we have a situation where parents can't speak with their kids and teachers can't speak with the kids, but there is a specific group that for some whatever reason we can't explain is able to speak with kids. There's nothing prohibiting, again, I say this again, from teaching sex education. In the 70s, I was in a class, in a health class, with a certified teacher that taught sex education. There's nothing prevents that from happening in this bill. All this does is say that abortion providers cannot be the individuals in the schools teaching that. That's all this does. As far as 80% of parents, I mean, I've heard all kinds of figures, 80%, 50%, 60%. I don't know about the percentage of parents that speak with their kids, obviously, because I'm not there, none of us are there when this is occurring. But I've also heard, again, that teachers can't speak with the kids, which is kind of a strange situation. There are many school districts in this country that teach sex education through a certified teacher in a health class and as part of biology. It happens all the time. That's not what this is about. This is about having abortion providers do that for us. And so, again, the only thing I could say to you through the chair, Representative Seaton, is that this does not prohibit the state of Alaska, this does not prohibit districts from having certified teachers identify curriculum, have it vetted through a school district, which it should be, and then present it in classes. There's nothing that prevents that. There's plenty of curriculum to be had through the internet, through companies, et cetera. There's plenty of training to be had. This bill does not prevent that from happening.
Okay. Thank you. Did you have one, Representative Drummond? Or?
Not at this time.
Okay. So with that, excuse me, we're going to go to public testimony, and Senator Dunleavy has another meeting here in a few minutes. So if we would go to online, I'm going to go down the list here. Michelle Hartland, is it, from Nikiski? If you would identify yourself for the record, tell us who you represent, and give us your testimony, and thank you, Senator Dunleavy and Krista. Michelle, go ahead.
Yes.
We hear you. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. This is Michelle Hartline from Nikiski. I represent myself, and I also represent parents from around the country who have morals and respect for what our responsibilities and our rights are as parents. I've always taught my children and my grandchildren that it is my responsibility to educate them, not the school district. The school district is simply a tool. And I am the one who's responsible for making sure what they learn and how they learn it. I see Representative Drummond here, and my children went to Stellar at the same time that hers did, I believe. And we chose that because we had more of a voice by going to an alternative school. And this is my position, and I don't know where the 80% comes in, but I can tell you probably 100% of the people I've known throughout my life have had the sex education talks with their children. It may not sit down and say these are birds and bees, but they've had those talks, so I don't know where that came from, but I am saying that abortion is not an issue in my life, and I do not want my children or other people's children to believe that that is their first recourse in a difficult situation, and that is what this bill is about. I do not want people in the schools that are trying to teach and sway and encourage and brainwash children to do something that I consider and most people consider is not morally responsible. I'm not saying there's not issues in times of the whole abortion issue. I'm not saying that there might not be circumstances involved, but that's on an individual basis, and that's where the family, not people from outside the school district and outside the family, the family makes those decisions and makes those educated decisions on their own. Leave these abortion people out of it and do not allow them into the schools to influence children. That's what I have to say, and I strongly support you. I strongly encourage your support for this Senate Bill 89. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Michelle. Before we proceed, I just want to thank you for your testimony. It was concise and precise, and just as a matter of standard, you followed it. We'll take about no more than 3 minutes on each testimony, and we're going to be watching carefully that we don't get disrespectful toward anybody on this. And you didn't, and you did a very fine job. Thank you, Michelle. Bill Hartline.
Yes, my name is Bill Hartline. I'm a private individual from Nikiski, Alaska. Obviously, previous speaker and I are related. I also feel the same way that the parents have their responsibility, especially when it comes to sex education. They're the primary. I do understand that there are people in the world that avoid this section, but I believe that the people should have the right to make their own decisions, not the school district. The state, the government, the school districts should not be that involved into this process. And that's about as much as I've got to say it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. we have several off net, which means that they're not an LIO. They're calling from a phone somewhere. I'm going to leave those for now and go to those that have traveled to the LIO. Ed Gray, Sitka.
Ed is right here.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ed, we hear you loud and clear. If you would identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is Ed Gray. I'm representing myself, and I have children here in the Sitka School District, and I want to state my support for SB 89. In September 2013, Planned Parenthood entered the Sitka schools, and I was one of 150 families that protested and opposed that, and thankfully we don't have them here anymore. And what we have in SICA is human sexuality is taught by certified teachers. Now, the reasons that we opposed having Planned Parenthood teach human sexuality in our SICA schools was because we consider the public schools to be common ground where everyone could send their children. And we don't share Planned Parenthood values. Their humanist secular view of human sexuality, we don't support. Secondly, they're the largest abortionist and abortion advocate in the U.S. They kill 335,000 unborn children a year and leave hundreds of thousands of broken post-abortive women and girls to mourn the death of their children. We mourn with them. We don't share with their values. I've noticed over the course of testimony that there are young people. There are many young people that testify, and they come pro Planned Parenthood, pro abortion, and pro abortion lobbying. And I'd just like to say that these relationships of these children that are coming here to testify are built in the schools. They're cultivated in the schools. And as we oppose the values of Planned Parenthood, we oppose Planned Parenthood and abortion providers being in our schools. So please vote in favor of SB 89, and thank you for this time to testify.
Thank you, Ed. Michael Boyle. Michelle, I'm sorry. Michelle?
Sorry, Michael Boyle is not a testimony. Oh. He is the listen only.
Oh, it was marked differently on mine, so thank you.
Yes, I apologize on that.
Yeah. Julie Stromer?
Yes, excuse me. Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Julie Stromer, and I'm representing myself, and I support SB 89. I also was a parent that had a child in the school district here in Sitka when the Planned Parenthood volunteer came in, and I will say that it was very upsetting because, as Ed Gray said, Planned Parenthood is the number one abortion provider in the United States and even worldwide, and what they're doing in school systems is beyond me. I pay my taxes. I feel that my children going to public school should be able to be in a place where their parents feel that they're safe in this respect. Now, this young woman came in, and I felt that she was causing a wedge between the children and the parents right away. The children that opted out, my daughter for one, sat in an area with tables, and when she went through, she basically asked why they wouldn't come with her. They were going to have a lot of fun down the hall, and it's obvious that they were in that room because their parents wanted them to be in that room. And as she went through, she said, well, I guess you could just stay there and do boring old homework. And that's what all of the parents who are against Planned Parenthood being in the school system are afraid of. They do not want the wedge to be between their children and themselves when this is such an important topic, and parents have the right to teach their own children their beliefs, their moral beliefs, and their human sexuality beliefs. And I really hope that you continue to support SB 89. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Now we're going to go to Fairbanks LIO, Keith Kerber.
Hello, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Keith Kerber, and I'm representing myself. I'm an Alaskan parent and grandparent. And I strongly support SB 89. I'm grateful for Senator Dunleavy's work on this in the Senate, and I'm asking the members of the House to support this, primarily because the last thing that I would like to see happen to our state is a reduction or erosion of parental rights concerning issues of profound importance. So again, thank you. I've enjoyed listening to the testimony. I was here at about 8:02, so I caught most of it. And again, strongly support Senator Dunleavy's efforts on this and request your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Robert Hakima, is it? But we're going to Anchorage LIO now. Robert, if you would, identify yourself and who you represent and give us your testimony.
Hello there. My name is Robert Hakima, and I'm here representing myself.
Great. Go ahead and give us your testimony.
Awesome. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. As I said, my name is Robert Hakima. I'd like to take the time to make you guys aware of a recent report from the New York Times on March 7th. The Times reported that the unplanned pregnancy rate in the U.S. had declined to its lowest level in the last three decades. And I think that's excellent news for us. I think we can all say, regardless of our support or opposition to this bill, that we have an interest in lowering that number. And then that's exactly why I want to express my deep concern for Senate Bill 89, because I think it alleviates the accessibility of the comprehensive sex education that leads to those numbers, that reduces unplanned pregnancy rates and sexually transmitted infection rates among students. Now, it's not just the number that I care about. Right? As a student of UAA, I have an interest in keeping my peers safe and healthy. And I think that it's important to recognize that, like, a fundamental precursor to safety and well-being in college is great pre-college education. That's where Senate Bill 89 comes in for me. I think anyone with kids or anyone who has had kids knows why opt-in systems in schools are a problem, because they actually discourage participation in programs. I don't think it has anything to do with engaging parents in their kids' education. It's pretty simple. The parents who are least involved in their kids' education are the most likely to neglect a form or to not sign it or to forget about it, and I think that's the students who are most affected by this bill. So that being said, I think it's simple. The less participants that you have in sex ed, which is what SB 89 encourages, the more students you have less equipped to prevent unplanned pregnancies. In a state with the highest rate of chlamydia in the nation and being well above the national average in unplanned pregnancy rates, I think we need to think long and hard before we pass legislation that actively discourages participation in a class that deters the rates of both of those things. Right? I want to see more reports like what came out in the New York Times on March 7th and not less of them. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your time, and I hope that you vote down this bill tomorrow when you look at the amendments for this bill. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Robert. Ricarda Lebman? Ricarda, Anchorage LIO, are you there? Going once?
Yes, I am here. Okay. My name is Ricarda Lebman. I'm representing myself. I am 61 years old, and I remember when I was in school, Texas had an opt-in for sex education. And unfortunately, my parents were the busy parents who did not sign the form that was given to us just the day before, even though I think they did have a notice requirement that wasn't followed. And about 15 of us missed out on our one opportunity all the way through high school to have sex education. So it just shows that that program doesn't really work as well as I keep hearing. I think it's sad that biased information is what a lot of these parents I hear talking about, when I have found that Planned Parenthood does not provide biased information, but factual information. I think that opting out is, or opting in is a bad idea, because I remember the evolution versus creation opting in. I remember books being opted in that classes wanted to teach. I just feel that this is a very bad bill. It plays to people's paranoia about education and who's providing it, and I ask you not to support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ricarda, for your testimony. We'll go to, is it Maura? Bela?
I'm sorry, it's Moira Pahala.
Okay. I'm sorry I mispronounced so badly. It's M-O-I-R-A and last name P-Y-H-A-L-A. Go ahead.
That is correct.
Go ahead and give us your testimony, please. You're representing yourself, you said?
Yes. Okay. Hello, good morning. My name is Moira Pahala, and I'm here representing myself. I'd like to say that without a sexual education program, students are at risk because they are in the dark about their own bodies. Without proper sex ed, students will resort to misled information from both the internet, aka porn, along with their peers. Misinformation about sex leads to unhealthy relationships and situations. This is one of the leading causes of violence against women in our country today. These are all the factors that Planned Parenthood is working every day to eliminate in our society. It's a known fact that states without a sex ed program implemented in their schools face higher numbers of STIs and unintended pregnancy every year. If you truly wanted to help our state, it would be in everyone's best interest to focus on the state's fiscal issue, not dwell on an unnecessary bill such as SB 89. As a proud supporter of Planned Parenthood, president of Generation Action, Students for Reproductive Justice at UAA, and a student myself, I ask that the committee does not support this bill and works on more important issues, such as regaining funding for our university. Please give students the tools they need to flourish, not endanger themselves and others. It's not supporting school districts, it's limiting them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for calling in and giving us your testimony. Before I go to off-nets, I'm going to go ahead in the room here. Some of you traveled in this morning. Joy Lyon, parent from Juneau.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joy Lyon, and I'm here as a parent of two young adults. I wanted to share my personal story with you. When I turned 15, my mom had me a pamphlet. I think it was called The Facts of Life. And she said to me, if you ever get pregnant, you'll be out of this house so fast you won't remember where you came from. And she said it really fast. And that was my sex education at home, just because that was more than she got at her age, at that age. And so I thought my husband and I would do much better than that. And we were on it, we were reading, but it turns out we were very uncomfortable as well. We just hadn't had that modeling. And so when a Planned Parenthood educator offered a workshop, we signed up. And we signed up both our children, who were 15 and 16 at that time, and our 16-year-old's first girlfriend and her dad. And we all went with parents and teens together. And I don't know who dreaded it more, the teens or the parents, because it's like going to get your wisdom teeth out or something. But at the end of the day, after we, together with her support, we talked about our values, our expectations. We talked about contraceptives and STDs and healthy relationships. And both of my children said they had never gotten that in the school. And I really wished that they had, and that all children were getting this information. And at the end of the day, the closing circle, the teen said to us, you know, you adults know way more about sex than we thought you did. And I think it's because we weren't talking about it with them that they thought, oh, well, we just don't have the information to give them then. So my complaint now is that they're 25 and 27, married, and they're planning their pregnancies a little too much. I'm ready to be a grandparent. So, you know, looking at online, I saw that's where the teens are going now, apparently, but I saw the Department of Health and Social Services report from 2009 that said that half of pregnancies in Alaska are unintended. So I think us parents and teachers are not doing well right now with teaching the subject. And half of those babies that were born unintended are on Medicaid. So the cost, according to 2009 report, was $18,000 for the birth of each of those children on Medicaid. And if we were able to reduce that by half, the state would save $44 million a year. So I'm not sure now that would be more, since that was 2009. So I don't know how much the unintended pregnancy rate would go up if we stopped teaching or, you know, having the best access to the best information. But I don't think our state can afford to have more unintended pregnancies. And so I urge you to really reconsider this, especially about the parent permission, because as busy parents, it is very hard to, you know, remember to and find those forms if your child even brought it home to you. So thank you for your time and consideration.
Thanks for coming in, Joy. Christine, Amy in the room, if you would, come up.
Good morning.
Identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Christine Nimi, and I'm actually going to be reading a statement from the League of Women Voters Alaska, and I am a member of the local chapter. And this is for the record.
Okay. Well, and you'll give a copy to our recorder when you're done, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. The League of Women Voters of Alaska strongly opposes both SB 89 and SB 191 based on the long-established 1983 League of Women Voters of the United States position on reproductive choices, which states the following. The League of Women Voters U.S. believes that public policy in a pluralistic society must affirm the constitutional right to privacy of the individual to make reproductive choices. In addition, the League of Women Voters U.S. position on health care supports a basic level of care that includes prenatal and reproductive health. This basic care for reproductive health can have far-reaching positive effects, including healthier babies and stronger and more financially stable families. Prenatal and reproductive care can also save public monies. The Guttmacher Institute, I hope I pronounced that right, reports that in 2010, Title X supported reproductive health services resulted in a net savings in Alaska of $17.9 million due to the prevention of unintended or closely spaced pregnancies, low birth weight babies, STD transmission, and cervical cancer cases. This type of success is possible only when sexually active men and women have access to sound medical information and medical care. To ban the use of a Title X-funded reproductive health facility from teaching young men and women simply because in some cases they also provide, with public funding, abortion services is unwise. Such facilities have as one of their main purposes the prevention of unintended pregnancies. I'm going to skip a paragraph in case I run out of time. Those who oppose the teaching provided by Title X-funded reproductive health workers should experience the classes taught by them. Those parents who are uncomfortable with a science-based approach to sex education can always opt out. But to most parents, education is not an activity to be avoided, especially when it comes to the important area of reproductive health. League of Women Voters Alaska strongly urges the members of the Alaska legislature to reject both of these bills. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Christine. Vicki Kelly, you signed a paper, but you didn't indicate that you want to testify. Is there a Vicki in the room? Okay, you bet. Okay. So what we're going to do now is go back to some off-nets that are there, and we're going to start with Marcy Hawkins. She's been online for quite a while. Marcy, are you there?
Yes, Representative Keller, I am. Thank you so much. My name is Marcy Hawkins. I live in Sutton, Alaska, and I am here as myself. I am opposed to the passing of SB 89, as well as the what I call the companion, SB 191, which is currently in the Senate making its way to you. I would look very closely at what we call abortion service providers. We label them that anyone associated with Planned Parenthood provides abortions. I think that language is very discriminating and maybe retooled if you have to pass this. I really wouldn't want you to. These people have been trained to teach that sex ed, and with removing the curriculum now in place by school districts, you are forcing school districts to use funding, which they don't have, because I don't think any of you have given them funding for this, to research new curriculum, to find ways to train people to teach these particular classes. And whereas this curriculum currently used is either free or does not cost much, The new ones and the new requirements are going to be very expensive by chance. No one has bothered to give the amount of money that will be needed to research people to make sure that they're not affiliated with any of these abortion providers. We may be excluding doctors, nurses, hospitals even, for what we know of. Planned Parenthood is not the only abortion, quote, provider in the state of Alaska. I would encourage the education committee to go to schools and watch what's being taught. Everyone says parents can. Of course parents can. I haven't met a school yet that said, oh my gosh, no, you cannot come in. School I'm sitting here welcomes parents with open arms begging them to show up. I have never been denied access to any public school curriculum. I am the mother of 5 children. 2 of them I have homeschooled, and it was not because of abortion providers coming into schools. It was because of overcrowding, bullying, and the rampant drug abuse that I think we need to be focusing on more than worrying about, you know, this excluding abortion services. So when you think of passing this, please give consideration on where new training's coming from. Where's the money coming from? Because the last time I looked, we weren't giving much to our school districts. We were cutting budgets. I would encourage you to find out in this task force that they're putting together regarding brief law, who's on the task force? Do they have connections with abortion providers? We're using this term so negatively to apply it to a huge random portion of people who want to educate, not haul children down to have abortions. We want to prevent pregnancies. We want to prevent rape. We want to prevent dating violence. We want to prevent all this stuff that, you know, we would count normally as sexual matters. And I'm still having trouble trying to define, you know, like Representative Seaton said, sexual matters, you know, doesn't it incorporate all of this? So in concluding, I would ask very much that you please do not pass this bill. It is not a good bill, and it's going to cause a lot of problems. I have sometimes hard time talking to children about sex. I imagine a teacher who is not used to a child 24/7 having a hard time talking about sex. And if by chance a young person comes up and says, I'm pregnant, you know, what do I do? And they don't have a loving parent, you know, what advice would you want to give for this? I think that, you know, you need to go out into the field, or Senator Dunleavy, I don't know, you know, if he's been in a public school lately, you know, to see what the actual curriculum is and whether or not they run around, you know, demanding that, you know, young people have abortions before you even consider this bill and SB 191. I thank you so much. I am now off to work. And have a wonderful day.
Marcy, thank you for taking time before work to call. We're going to go to Barbara Haney, North Pole.
Hi. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. As many of you know...
Barbara, state your name and who you represent, please.
My name is Barbara Haney, and I represent myself.
Please go ahead.
I support SB 89. This bill, when it was originally put forward, really was not a Planned Parenthood bill. As I understand the earlier version, at least, this gives the parents the power to opt out of anything that they don't feel is appropriate. You had a couple speakers talk about Planned Parenthood sex education units. But if you notice, the parents were very much involved, and the parents were in favor of it. What SB 89 does is it gives parents that opportunity to basically refuse anything or opt out of anything that they don't approve. And that isn't just Planned Parenthood. It's also statewide testing that has to do with, which is entirely consistent with the new legislation at the federal level, and it can be anything else that they might find objectionable. I do want to address a little bit of the Planned Parenthood issue, but my primary focus is that parents have the right to opt their children out of testing. If you look at the new ESSA, provision 111E2 is titled Testing Transparency, and that will be telling the districts that they need to inform parents of the right to refuse or opt out of testing. So I highly encourage the state to get ahead of that implementation and make sure that you have a policy there that is clear, that isn't just testing, whatever else a parent might want to opt out of, they should be able to. I do want to talk a little bit about Planned Parenthood. I noticed a few people...
Barbara, if you could, I think you came on a little later, so we want to stick within 3-minute guidelines, so I just wanted to give you a heads up so I don't interrupt you. Go ahead.
Right. So anyway, when you look at Planned Parenthood, you know, everybody's talking about how wonderful it is, yet we have teen pregnancy rising and STD skyrocketing. What they're currently delivering, the curriculum, maybe it's not too good. Maybe we should be restricting them from offering this, and maybe the state should be doing something different. But I think the parents still have the right to make that decision. Schools are run by parents and the districts. They're not run by nonprofit organizations. We should be doing what the parents who have children attending that school or that district feel is appropriate. And for this reason, I very much support SB 89. There's a couple of things that I'm kind of ambivalent about, but I support the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Barbara. We're going to go to Andy. Is it Holman or Holloman from Anchorage? Are you there?
This is Andy Holloman in Anchorage. I'm speaking on behalf of the Anchorage Education Association, the staff of the Anchorage School District. And I'd like to speak specifically to Section 5 of the bill. Among my membership are the school nurses in the Anchorage School District. And we're talking about in the range of about 80 individuals. A lot of them work second jobs with hospitals or with doctors. And of course, like a lot of people, some of them are doing it to supplement their income. A lot of them are doing it in order to keep their skills really sharp. I know several that work in intensive care units or different areas like that. As I read the bill, the ones that work with regional hospital would not be able to talk to students during the school day about any of these materials. They wouldn't be able to go to a classroom, speak to a classroom on anything regarding sex ed. And this, quite frankly, kind of floors me, baffles me. In addition, there's a gray area where if they are working in a medical office of a doctor that has privileges at a hospital, whether or not that umbrella would cover them as well. So it seems very broad, and it seems a bit gray around the edges. It seems really dark right in the middle. But I hope that's something that can be clarified, is if you mean for full-time school employees that also work during the summer with an organization that is affiliated with an abortion provider, and that's a number of our hospitals, it's a number of our doctor's offices, if they are then prohibited in their main job from discussing a really important issue with students. The other key thing I'd like to say generally is I hope the committee will look at the materials they are talking about banning. I am unaware of, quote, abortion being taught in school. I'm unaware of anyone ever suggesting to a student that abortion is an easy solution to an unwanted pregnancy. We hear a lot of things as teachers. You know, if we spot a kid praying, we immediately have that kid arrested and sent off to jail. That we are afraid to say the Pledge of Allegiance because it offends people. And I have to tell you, in my 20 years in an Anchorage school, I've never seen a school that did hearing is abortion's being taught in schools and it has to be stopped. I hope you'll look and see real evidence of that happening before you take a step like this and pass a law like this. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Thanks for taking time to call in. Pamela Samash? Samash?
Hello, good morning.
Pamela?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay, thank you. Okay. Good morning. Sorry, I'm trying to get my kids off to school, and they're late because I wanted to testify, so they're kind of antsy.
Well, thanks for interrupting your schedule. If you would, identify yourself for the record and who you represent and give us your testimony. Thank you.
Pamela Samash. I'm a mom, and I also am president of Right to Life Interior Alaska. You're going to hear a three-year-old interrupt us. Sorry, I can't do anything about that. Oh, good job. He found it. Okay, so good morning. I'm calling in support of SB 89. Thank goodness for this wonderful bill. I support it because SB 89 puts parents and children first by ensuring parental rights in the school system and guarding children from the training of an abortion institution that has curriculum remarkably similar to pornography, that uses teens to do role play of their ideas of safe sex, and who jokes and laughs when figuring out ways to methodically abort children to profit from their body parts. Parents and teachers and nurses can teach our kids. I am asking you as a parent to please vote yes on 89 and to protect our kids and our parental rights. The children will not benefit, but will suffer physically, emotionally, and spiritually from Planned Parenthood's influence. Now, I heard that there were supporters that say that there is an option to contact the parents to have their children opt out of Planned Parenthood training. And I don't know how you folks are going to vote today, but if you vote to not do SB 89, which would be really tragic, and I would feel horrible if you did that. But if you're counting on the part where they contact parents to opt their children out, then you would have. I would highly recommend, as a parent of two public school kids, that you would have a contact system similar to that of an urgent. See, there's two different ways that the public school contacts parents. Either send notes home with kids, or they contact them directly, okay? And there's two different ways. And I think when I hear the testimonies that have come in for 191 and 89 over and over and over again that are against it, and they say that kids can opt out and parents never opt out their kids, I'm going to guess, as a very experienced public school parent, that's because they didn't even know it was happening, because they probably send a note home with the kids, and when the school sends a home note with the kids, like more than half of the time, we don't even get the note. The children just totally forget to give it to their parents. So if you guys don't let this go through, I'm asking that you would please let it go through. Please, please, please. But if you don't let it go through, then can you make sure that they contact the parents directly and that they don't, try to do it through a note system with the kids? Because the kids are going to want to fit in with their peers, you know, and they're not going to tell the parents. So, again, it's just another form of separation. So that's my testimony, and I appreciate your time, and I know you've got a lot of other callers, so thank you.
Thank you, Pamela. Go to David Neese.
Yeah, good morning. This is David Neese testifying for himself. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Thank you.
All right. I would just like to advocate that SB 89 is a measure worthy of being passed out of committee and onto Health and Human Services, and then hopefully out to the floor for debate. You have to decide if the Alaska Education Clause included health education in it. It actually doesn't have anything about that in there. The main thing that you have is that Planned Parenthood is a private organization. And some people would almost say it's a religious organization, which is prohibited from receiving public funds. So when you look back at Margaret Sanger, she was trying to solve a problem 100 years ago. Poor Irish women having multiple babies and no way of preventing unwanted pregnancies. And during her career, she spent a lot of time trying to help the poor people from having excess number of babies. And she put it down to the fact that they were not educated. They were not smart enough to make that decision, where educated people choose how many children they're going to have, and then they do a better job of raising them. So it's based on a philosophy from 100 years ago that basically says poor people are breeding like rabbits, and they don't have any way to stop this. I don't think that's a message that belongs in public school. I have been in the ASD for 28 years, used to be taught in middle school at by our health people in the classrooms, and classroom teachers did it. Farming this out to a private organization and giving your data of your children, their names, addresses, numbers, to that organization so they can reach out to them later is probably just bad public policy. I'm in favor of passing SB 89 out of committee and off to the next committee, and hopefully it'll get to the floor of the session. I think the debate should be lively and robust, and I think it really centers on the basic essential of, is the government in charge of the child, or is the parent in charge of the child? Thank you very much.
Thank you, David, for taking time to call and give us your testimony. David Boyle.
Good morning, Chairman Keller, committee members. I'm David Boyle, and I represent myself and my three adopted children, who, by the way, are not byproducts of parenthood. You should meet them someday. You know, I find this a very interesting discussion, and I find that it's really not so much about sex education as it is about parents' rights or their constitutional rights. The question we need to ask is, when do parents' rights override government rights? Do they ever? Let's take another example other than, quote, sex education. What if the marijuana businesses wanted to present to students about the harmlessness of marijuana in the public schools? Would a parent be allowed to opt out, or would they have to be opt in, or would they be required to opt out? We could also say something, same thing could go for, let's say, maybe the alcohol groups in the state would like to present on the harmlessness of alcohol. Would a parent have to opt in, or would they be required to opt out? Now let's talk about the control of information by some of the public schools that we have. Remember No Child Left Behind? Well, in No Child Left Behind, a few years ago, if a parent had a child in a failing school, and there were 13 of these schools designated in Anchorage School District, the parent had the right to get their child to a better public school with two choices and free transportation. Well, here's how the Anchorage School District handled that. The last year that they had public school choice, the Anchorage School District sent out letters to 8,700 families. That's families. Those families received those letters the day after the registration window closed for public schools. In other words, the parents had already registered their children for school, and they were probably not likely to opt in for the public school choice. You know, we always hear about the lack of parent involvement in schools, and I think that is a problem. However, with opt-out, we're even going to have less parental involvement in schools. So let's get the parents involved in their children's education, and let's also maintain their rights and their responsibilities to raise their children. It is their responsibility, not the state's. We do not need the government as surrogate parents. Please support SB 89, pass it out of committee, and maintain parents' constitutional rights. And thank you very much for the work you're doing and the opportunity.
Thank you, David. Thank you for taking time to call in. Is there anybody else in the room that wanted to testify? Looks like we've had another caller from Sitka. So we'll go there. Kathy Johnson?
Yes, I'm here.
If you would, identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Kathy Johnson.
As a parent and a grandparent, I've seen the devastating effects of sexual activity without boundaries. Sexuality is a great gift that comes with responsibility, not just in preventing pregnancy and STDs. We do our kids a disservice in teaching them that self-control is either not possible or not necessary. Are all teens going to exercise self-control? Of course not. But many more might if they were taught of the emotional, spiritual, and physical consequences. Planned Parenthood will teach them about safe sex, how to use a condom, and give them birth control pills. If by chance there is a pregnancy, they will offer an abortion. But the consequences are still there, affecting individuals, families, and future generations. Planned Parenthood doesn't want to come into our schools because it is a benevolent charity who loves our children. It is a business with an ideology, a big business. Any person is free to walk into their office if they agree with the ideology and want their services. Not satisfied with that, they want to influence all of our kids. Please don't let them into the schools. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else online that wants to testify on SB 89? Okay, we'll close public testimony, and that puts the bill before us. If the committee has comments, like I said, if you have suggested changes to the bill, the deadline is noon tomorrow, and that will give us time to interact with the sponsor and to make sure we understand what your amendment is, and is there any comments or whatever on the bill or debate? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we were going through the bill, there was one question I put on record to the sponsor's staff earlier that I missed, and that was on page one, the last part there, where recognizing the authority to withdraw a child from standard-based assessment or a test required by the state, and I was wanting some clarification on a test required by the state, because if the state requires a test and we're saying that, you know, school district has to have policies that opt out of the requirement of the state, I don't know what how that puts the school district in statutory non-compliance with a requirement of the state. And I put that on the record last time when we were first there and going through the bill. You know, is that, are we now saying that tests are not required by the state, or only suggested by the state?
Yeah.
And so, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I forgot when the sponsor was here, but I found my note, and so I wanted to make
it's on the record, and that's great, and the sponsor isn't here at the moment, and we will make sure he gets that question and speak to it on Wednesday or, before we act on the bill. Any other debate or questions or comments? Seeing none, we'll set SB 89 aside for the moment. I would like to ask, as a matter of housekeeping, HB 156, I respectfully request the committee to talk to me if you have concerns. I realize we have not had yet extensive opportunity for you to ask questions of the department, because we've been just hitting it wrong as far as the right timing. And so I'm going to put that off until Wednesday. We're not going to bring it up today, even though it was on the schedule for today. But make sure you bring your paperwork on HB 156 for Wednesday. And if you have concerns or questions, I would very much appreciate talking with you. Representative Seaton.
And, Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, did we adopt version I as our working document committee substitute?
Representative Seaton, we will confirm that, but I believe the working document that we adopted is Yankee. Yankee version is what we have been working on the last two sessions. It was adopted on the onset of the meeting two meetings ago. So that is the working document.
Okay. Okay, I don't believe I have that.
Okay. Any comments for the good of the order? We don't often have the luxury of being a little bit ahead of time. If not, we're gaveled out at 9:42.